Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. You are out on the front line with the fruit of Islam. I am your host, Jihad Muhammad. Our topic tonight is male-female relationships, part two, and the law of cause and effect. Our panelist tonight is Magistrate Court Justice Brother Maurice Muhammad, Attorney at Law Brother Kenneth Muhammad, and Dianetic Certified Auditor Brother Stanley Bateen Muhammad. Tonight, what are the challenges we face in America concerning male and female relations? So sit back and relax and go and get your family and loved ones and get ready to call in and ask our panelists questions or make a comment. Are we in a state of emergency where male and female relationships are concerned in America? What say you? We'll be right back.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we're forever thankful and grateful to Allah for His coming and raising among us the Messiah, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and giving to us our leader, teacher, and guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Tonight, we welcome you to Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam. But first, we must address the major hurricane that has taken place in the northeast corner of the United States today. Today started yesterday, and it still continues on tonight. Before we get started, we want to hear from Governor Christie on the interview that he did concerning the state of emergency in the state of New Jersey. Brother Rafi, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, my brother. Go right ahead, sir.
All right.
Off ramps all over the place, flooded with water or scattered debris. So it is very difficult to get around. It's been hard.
Maggie, we're going to
pinpoint.
Maggie, we're going to have to interrupt you. The New Jersey governor is now holding a news conference. Chris Christie, let's listen.
Assistance we needed. He moved that expedited process this morning by declaring New Jersey a major disaster area. The eight counties that are receiving an immediate declaration for individual and public assistance include Atlantic, Cape May, Hudson, Essex, Middlesex, Monmouth, Ocean, and Union. Please note that this list is not final, and other counties most certainly will be added as we make a damage assessment. The biggest issues we're facing right now in our most impacted counties are search and rescue and restoration of power. I want to make sure that we're getting to New Jerseyans who chose not to leave evacuated areas or got caught in unexpected floodwaters. Our priority right now is to ensure the safety and security of every New Jerseyan. Our state police and National Guard helicopters are in the air as we speak, engaging in coastline rescue efforts. Our Swiftwater team is positioned in Atlantic City and has begun rescue and recovery for those who remained in Atlantic City. Teams units from Central and South to Union Beach, Middletown, Belmar, and Manasquan are beginning search and rescue operations. We saw significant tidal flooding in several areas, everywhere from Jersey City, the Newark Bay area, Sayreville, Moonaki, and Little Ferry. In Monocacy and Little Ferry, we've dispatched state and federally supported teams to assist in rescues and are providing shelters to those in need. 18 members of our speed deployment are also headed there. In addition to the USAR Type 1 and Swiftwater Rescue Team, 10 high-wheel vehicles and boats. We provided temporary sheltering at Teterboro Airport for the impacted residents between Monocacy and Little Ferry. We're delivering dry clothes and blankets, and we're working to transition them to a different shelter. We provided support to the Jersey City Police Department, the Newark Fire Department, and the Essex County Sheriff's Office in the face of a citywide power outage in both Jersey City and Newark from high tidal surge. 4 high-wheeled National Guard vehicles were sent to Jersey City from the Jersey City Armory to assist evacuations at the request of Jersey City Chief of Police Tom Comey. The National Guard has repositioned equipment to strategic locations across New Jersey and has more than 450 high-water vehicles, including Humvees and heavy trucks, available to assist civil authorities. They're also providing helicopters with video download capabilities to conduct reconnaissance of shorelines, the Raritan and Passaic River basins, and other areas in post-landfall damage assessments. There are currently over 5,500 residents in state and local shelters as of our latest count. We are working to stand up shelters as we learn of new needs in addition to the 5 existing state-supported shelters, 2 at Rutgers, 2 at Monmouth, and 1 at Menin Arena in Morris Township, New Jersey. We are in the process of opening a 6th shelter at the Rutgers Athletic Center that can support nearly 2,000 people. We want to make sure people have enough food and water for a while, which is why we are working with the Salvation Army and the American Red Cross to bring in mobile kitchens to serve thousands of meals. Boxed lunches are being delivered to state shelters today. We are also using FEMA food and water resources. The National Guard has deployed and staged soldiers and airmen at the Freehold and Woodbridge Armories for support of state-supported shelter facilities if needed. There are a vast number of New Jerseyans today without power. In fact, we currently have 2.4 million New Jersey households without power. This is, just so you understand the order of magnitude here, this is twice the number of impacted households as Hurricane Irene. Hurricane Irene was 1.2 million impacted households. This is 2.4 million impacted households. 1.2 million of the 2.4 million are from PSE&G, 935,000 from JCP&L, 195,000 from Atlantic City Electric, and 45,000 from Orange and Rockland. During Hurricane Irene, restoration took 8 days for full restoration. For Hurricane Sandy, the full restoration may in fact take longer. Full damage assessment will not be complete until 24 to 48 hours due to some of the weather delays. They cannot develop the time frame for restoration until damage assessments are underway, and obviously these difficult weather conditions are making this more of a challenge. However, the utility companies have continued to reach out to other states for assistance, and we are expecting additional linemen, servicemen and tree clearing workers from states as far away as Texas and Indiana, and even folks coming in to us from Canada. It will remain extremely dangerous in areas where trees and wires are down. Ask people to use extreme caution. Assume that any wire you see down is a live wire, and please do not go near it. There are currently 173 incidents statewide involving highway lane closures. Most of these closures are the result of downed trees, utility poles, and flooding. Closures are statewide with the highest concentration in Monmouth County, but no county in the state has been spared, so avoid travel unless absolutely necessary. I want to say this now to private employers. Unless you can identify a safe route for your employees to get to work, I'd ask you to allow them to stay home from work today. We've deployed 800 employees from NJDOT to clear these incidents, and we were able to open, as you already know, the Garden State Parkway this morning for its full length. The New Jersey Turnpike is open from exits 1 to exit 10. The Turnpike Authority is continuing to work to clear inner roadways between Interstates 10 and 14 of 7-foot-high debris fields. 24 small rail cars were deposited on the northbound outer roadway in the Carteret area by tidal surge. So for those of you who've driven in that area around exit 12, you know it well. There's small freight rail cars off to the side of the roadway. Those rail cars were picked up by the tidal surge and carried onto the elevated roadway and landed all throughout the outer roadway of the New Jersey Turnpike on the northbound side. Additionally, the southbound ramp from exit 15W to Interstate 280 has a large washout. This is currently being looked at by our engineers with a standby contractor, and as soon as we assess the complete nature of the damage, we'll begin repair work on that ramp. New Jersey Transit service remains suspended throughout the day today. Later today, New Jersey Transit will begin assessing the status of the system and testing critical infrastructure before any decisions are made regarding the potential resumption of service. We do know this. There is major damage on each and every one of New Jersey's rail lines. Large sections of track were washed out on the New Jersey coastline. Numerous power lines and trees have fallen along New Jersey Transit railways across the state. Several rail bridges damaged by storm surge, including posts and other debris lodged on the railroad tracks. New Jersey Transit rail station hubs at Hoboken, Secaucus, and Newark Penn Station were also impacted significantly by flooding. New Jersey Transit's rail operation complex in Kearney is fully surrounded by floodwaters, which came during the height of the storm. Regarding our drinking water, we're seeing numerous water supply issues because of flooding and power loss. We currently have at least 10 facilities with minor to major problems. On wastewater treatment facilities, we have at least 13 facilities, again, with minor to major operational issues due to flooding and loss of power. Commissioner Martin, the DP, is working with all these facilities to see how we can bring them power supply, equipment, and resources to help bring them back online as soon as possible. In terms of our health care facilities, a total of 91 health care facilities have reported that they lost street power. This includes 29 hospitals, 58 long-term care facilities, and others. However, we're expecting this number to increase as people call them in. Some are reporting phone problems and their ability to be able to phone in issues to us. Most are managing well, and many are using generator power to be able to continue to care for their patients. Department of Health has requested 100 ambulances from the FEMA ambulance contract, and we have received assistance from numerous other states. Last, before I take questions, upstairs in the conference room that we're using to manage this crisis, we're given a look for the first time of the portions of the Jersey Shore by State Police helicopter, who was operating their cameras and relaying the images back. We looked at Lavalette, Ortley Beach, Seaside Heights, and Seaside Park. All of them are nearly completely underwater. Houses are moved off of their foundations. There are houses in the middle of Route 35. The amusement pier at Seaside Park is essentially half washed out. In other words, the roller coaster or the log flume is now in the ocean. The second pier, the more southerly pier, is also significantly damaged, and some of those amusements are now in the ocean. The level of devastation at the Jersey Shore is unthinkable. And we know that there are many people who own homes who we've evacuated who are going to want to get back onto the island to assess the damage to their homes. We are nowhere near being able to let you back onto the island. There is no place. I'm leaving here soon after this press conference to go and tour. there's no place for me to land on the barrier islands. So we're going to have to get to Brick is about as close as I can get to see if the rest of them are going to have to see from the air. So with the instability of infrastructure on the barrier islands, we haven't been able to assess the natural gas situation and others. We know there's no power. It would be completely unsafe for homeowners to think about today or any time in the next couple of days going back onto those barrier islands. So we want everyone to remain patient in that regard. I will report back fully to you at my press briefing this afternoon. What I see today, we'll be taking press with us on a pool basis so that you can see what I see from the helicopters and report back to the public as well. But to prepare the public for what they're going to see, it is beyond anything I thought I'd ever see. Terrible. And so we need to remain patient. We'll let the waters recede, and then we can go in and make a full assessment about rebuilding that area of the Jersey Shore. But it is a devastating sight right now. So we have a lot of work to do. I have absolute confidence in the fact that we'll be able to do it and do it together. I have confidence in the fact that we'll have complete support from the President of the United States and federal authorities. I think it's very important, though, for me today, now that at least the wind has let up a little bit, to see it myself, so that when I talk to the President later today, I can tell him personally exactly what I've seen to give him the full measure of the devastation that's happened to our state. No question in my mind, given the reports that I've seen so far, that the devastation that's happened to New Jersey is beyond what's happened to anyone else, at least from the reports that I've seen so far. And that should come as no shock since the storm made landfall here.
All right, we're going to break away. Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey.
Thank you, Brother Rafi.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Brothers and sisters, I just want to let you hear that piece tonight from the governor of the state of New Jersey, and also that that's just one state out of 23 states that has been affected by Hurricane Sandy. 80 homes, that last report I received, 80 homes in Queens, New York, were destroyed by fire. 7.5 million people are without power. 29 deaths in 23 states that I've received thus far. Are there any callers on the line that would like to chime in that are calling from the area of New York or New Jersey that would like to give us some more insight? All right. Okay. All right, then. But, Brother Rafi, I really appreciate that, sir. And, our prayers go out to all our loved ones in the area. If you have loved ones in that area, please reach out. We have tried to reach out to several different believers that we know in the New Jersey area, and I'm not able to get through. Brother Rafi, are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm still here, sir. Yes, sir.
How are the believers doing in New Jersey, brother, in North New Jersey? Is there anything going on? Is there any shelters set up, or is there any type of water or survival kits or anything going on? Or what seems to be the status of the believers that you know of?
In all honesty, beloved, first of all, I wanted to say, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is His messenger. And I further bear witness the Honorable Louis Farrakhan is the divine reminder. Currently, I had called a lot of the soldiers this morning, and unfortunately, you can't get through. I would suspect that the satellite problems that's going on, everyone calling around, the lines are just clogged. I don't know if it's that or everyone just lost power. But I only reached two brothers today.
Wow.
Two brothers today, and one returned the call. So that's about all I can report on that.
Okay. Okay, well, we got work to do then, brother. And I thank you very much for your time and for that interview, brother. I really appreciate that.
It's my pleasure, sir.
From the 718 area code also on the line.
718 area code? Yes,
wow,
who are we talking to?
Marlene from
yes.
the Bronx.
Yes, ma'am. Sister, how are you tonight?
Fine, fine. I'm not a Muslim.
That's fine. Yes, I understand. But this is not an all Muslim show. It's called Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam, because it's the Fruit of Islam that runs the show. But this show is for you too, my sister. How are you doing tonight? And what's going on in your area?
What's going on in my area? My area is in the Bronx. It's like mainland, so there's not too much. We didn't have too much problems in the lower Bronx by Yankee Stadium. So just some outages, but it came out, it came back on. But I'm want to talk about something as to why all of this is happening, because I feel that we have to take care of Mother Earth. We have to have some respect for our environment, because all we're getting is the backlash of, you know, us wanting to rape the environment for her natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just have to start taking care. We have to start thinking about global warming. We have to start thinking about clean energy. And I know y'all may not. I mean, we have to push our politicians. We have to start doing this on a local level, so we won't be here talking about what we're going to do because the Great Mother has come and really wreaked havoc upon us.
Okay.
Hello? I'm just listening to you,
my sister. Right now, my concern right now is not the theology of it all right now. My concern is, how are you doing? How are your neighbors doing? How are the people of in New York doing?
Everybody is doing fine. Everybody is trying to get back to work. The buses are up. The buses are back running in my area.
Beautiful.
And but you know, we always got to think about the reason. And I understand what you're saying. You don't want to hear about why it happened, because it doesn't matter now.
No, ma'am, that's not the case here, sister. It's just that tonight we're dealing with the health issues of this devastation.
And tonight's
show is on male and female relationships, and you might want to stick around and chime in on that as well. But But thank you, sister, for calling in, and I'm glad that you're okay, your family is okay.
Everybody in my area is fine. We got our lights on. Like I say, our buses is back running. Like I say, we are in the mainland, New York. We're not on that island of Manhattan.
Okay.
Where everybody's paying the high rent.
Where? Yes, ma'am. Thank you, my sister, so much for calling in.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, brothers and sisters, is that it, Brother Vernon, for the call-ins?
We've actually got one more person on the line from the 314 area code.
Another 314? Yes. Who are we talking to?
Call us from 314. Please introduce yourself. They may have us on mute or something, but their microphone is open.
Oh, okay. The microphone is open. All right, okay. All right, then, brothers and sisters, let us get on with our show for tonight, and we're going to keep in contact with that, Brother Vernon, because, like I said, that's a very serious situation up in the northeast corner tonight, and our prayers go out to all those that are out there, and we definitely have to work on our own skills. For the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that this day was coming, and that what we need to do to prepare for it. But that's another show at another time. Our show tonight is on male and female relationships. On the panel tonight, we have with us our brother, who is a Dianetics certified auditor, Brother Stanley Bateen Muhammad. Brother Stanley, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
How are you tonight, my brother?
I'm doing fine by the grace of Allah.
Beautiful.
Glad to be here.
And we're glad to have you back, brother. We have
we had phone problems last time we were on the line, and you're back by popular demand. I've gotten calls about that. I had to call my brother back up in here. People enjoyed you last week and enjoyed what you had to say. Brother Magistrate Court Justice, Brother Maurice Muhammad, are you on the line, sir? No, Brother Maurice got dropped off.
Believe he's there. I see his number.
Yeah, we're
okay.
Here, dear brother.
Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam.
How are
we're
you tonight, sir?
I'm well, by Allah's grace, brother. We truly have boots on the ground right now. I'm actually in court, and we're actually dealing with some domestic issues right now. So
wow.
Yeah, so we're rocking and rolling as we're speaking. So we're definitely right in the midst of boots on the ground.
Wow. Wow. All right. And we have also attorney at law, Brother Kenneth Muhammad. Brother Kenneth, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well, brother. It's good to be on.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, we have a special guest with Brother Maurice right there in the court, Dr. Ricky Jeter. Is she on the line?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
How are you, my sister?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, I'm doing fine, ma'am. Praise be to Allah. Tell us a little bit about yourself, ma'am.
I'm a magistrate here with the city of Birmingham. I actually work with Mr. Muhammad.
Beautiful. All right. All right, sister. Well, we're glad to have you on the show tonight. This show tonight, again, is male-female relationships and the law of cause and effect. Just to give you a brief rundown on what we dealt with last week, the statistics show we have a very serious problem in America when it comes to relationships, and particularly between black males and black females. We have a statistic that shows that in divorce, 20 black women, 28%, Latino, 26%, and white, 49.7%. Unwed mothers, and this is an area where we want to talk about tonight. Unwed mothers, black women, 72%, Latino, 33%, and whites, 28%. Native Americans, 66%, and Asians and others, 17%. Abortion among black females is 30%, Latinos is 25%, and among whites is 36%. Now, we also have 67% of pregnancies in America are unwarranted pregnancies.
Wow.
Brother Bateen, yes, ma'am. Brother Bateen, I'd like
yes,
to ask
sir.
You a question. What does this unwanted pregnancy mean, and what effect does that have on the mother and the child?
Well, that's a deep question. You know, an unwanted pregnancy is something that points to a basic dysfunctionality that we have in our society, especially with black people, because every pregnancy should be wanted. And if you're in a relationship and somebody gets pregnant and you don't want, you know, the pregnancy is not wanted, that is speaking to a reality of dysfunctionality, you know, in the relationship. But it is just a sign of what is happening in the society. And it points to the fact that we as a people need to realign ourselves with each other. And, of course, we know that this didn't just start happening yesterday. The black man and the black woman, we're going to have to get back to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us when it comes to our relationships, male and female. He said to settle down to a good choice. And when we settle down to a good choice, and the good choice that we have settled down to, when that person gets pregnant or when you have a pregnancy in a relationship, then the pregnancy will be wanted. You know what I mean? The fact that it is unwanted just points to the fact that we have dysfunctionality in our relationship and that we have improper relationships, because the whole act of getting pregnant, the divine law basically points to the fact that this is the purpose of sex. The main purpose of sex, having sex, is to produce a pregnancy and to produce another child. So I think that that's what's wrong, is that we as a people don't really understand what we're doing, and we're acting off of emotion, and we're acting off of our biology instead of acting in accord with the laws of God, which require us to have a relation, to have a proper relationship, more specifically, to be married before we enter into such activity that will make somebody pregnant.
Okay. All right.
Sure.
Yes. Well, any of the other panels like to chime in on that? If not, I'll move right in. Keep on going.
I would like to say something. I want to kind of expound on what my brother said earlier about making good choices. And I think a lot of the time, we as women, we don't make good choices. We are very apt to judge a brother on his looks, or, you know, something as superficial as that. And we would actually give our bodies to someone who looks good that doesn't have a job, knowing that that relationship, where you may come together in a sexual relationship and a child can be produced. If I'm dating a man who does not have a job, who's not capable of taking care of himself, and it leads to a pregnancy, I think it's perpetuating a cycle there.
Okay. I think you're right, sister.
So I think it comes down to choices.
Okay.
We as women, we have to choose men that are capable of being, like my brother said, in a proper relationship, and not someone who just wants to bed us and move on to the next. I think a lot of times we as women are not making good choices, and I thought that was an excellent point.
Beautiful. Now, 72% of our sisters, Dr. Gita, 72% of our sisters are having children and they're not married. 72%. Do you think that a lot of this is based on, I'm going to ask you, what do you think is based on? Because from what we see here, at 72%, the sisters are not marrying the brothers, but they're having children by the brothers. Would you like to elaborate on why do you think that's taking place? Why is it that they're having the children, but they're not willing to start a family and make a wholesome family, but they're willing to have the child?
I think a lot of times that, and this is just my personal opinion, I think it's a lot of times that it comes down to what we're taught. Sometimes we're growing up in single-family homes to mothers who are not married or who've never been married. So we look at that and we think that that's okay. Or we may think everyone else that's growing up with us or that's around us, you know, they're doing it. So it's okay to have children when you're not married. So we're really not even placing, I think, respect for the institution of marriage. We're not saying, okay, ladies, young ladies, you're more than just your hips and your thighs. You're a person and you have value. And if a man can't value you for your spirit and he can't value you for who you are, why are you in a relationship or, I'll say, a pseudo relationship with this person where we're having sex and it's okay for us to do that, but it's not okay for him to hold me out as his fiance or his wife. And I think a lot of times it comes to environment. It comes to it's generational. I think there's a lot of extenuating factors that have us at that 72%.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
Let's yes, I'm here. Who's that?
It's Brother Gene, sir.
Yes, Brother Gene. Oh, Brother Gene, how are you?
Okay. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yes, sir. I just wanted to comment on the statistics of the women that are getting pregnant. I just want to say that it is all by design. It's all by design. And Satan said he's going to come after us in our straight path, meaning things that we love to do. See, this enemy knows what he's doing. But the thing is about a Brother Jihad is, as I listen on the radio, different radio shows, and they talk about this subject, but the one thing they never mention is that sex is divine. What happened to the divinity of it? It's not there anymore. And the brother stated about the dysfunctional that it causes, but, you know, I look at some of the sisters who are pregnant. I don't see any maternity clothes anymore. You know, back our parents used to wear the maternity shirts and the maternity pants. These sisters out here and wearing tight jeans and tight shirts and pregnant. So the infant mortality rate is at its all-time high. You know, the enemy has done this by design. I think what is really, really missing, other than, you know, marriage, you know, before sex, is the divinity of it all. It's really, really missing. That's not even mentioned.
Okay. Well, praise be to Allah, brother. Thank you. Thank you for that comment. Thank you for
brother
that comment,
Jihad.
Brother Gene. Yes, sir, Brother Maurice.
Yes, sir. I wanted to make a brief comment, and I'm so glad that Brother James mentioned that, the divinity of our coming together and procreation. We have even relieved us of the talk of procreation. We're having sex now.
Yes.
You know, so we have off the top taken away the aspect of divinity. See, when we began to say that procreation has now become recreation, because most of our people and most of us, even after receiving knowledge, are still having relationships with our significant others out of pain.
Mm.
So when we are engulfed in that pain, this seems to be a form of relief, because as we talked about the domestic violence situations, it's very, very, very few cases come around when you have intercourse and domestic violence. You can't do both at the same time. You know, there are very few instances where the person is upset. You know, I don't know how many people have ever had sex with a person or procreation when they're upset. You know, so at this point, that pain is now being replaced with a pleasure. But what has happened, we don't have a sense of balance for the pain and the pleasure. And now when that begins to relieve itself, then we can now pleasure ourselves at any time, and now we usher out the divinity of the procreation. And so a lot of our young people, one of the reasons that this 72% is so high is because we are touching base with pain. So that pain has been passed on through generations. As dear Sister Ricky said, it has become cyclical now. Now we have a grandmother who was in pain because she didn't have a man there to comfort her. And now she produces a daughter in pain. And now that daughter says that it is acceptable now for her to have sex to relieve that pain. So our dear brother, Brother Bateen, assalamu alaikum, soldier,
like
has
ground,
a big responsibility in the Dianetic sense, so that we can begin to relieve our community of some of the pain. And then what happens, we become actually sexually intoxicated when we are going one to the other, to the other. So at that point, our judgment is impaired. So now we don't know if we like the person or the feeling that they give us. So it is difficult to create family when you really put the cart before the horse. See,
right.
When you put the act
right.
before the commitment, it's difficult when the actual result of the act comes, it's difficult now to ask for commitment.
Right.
So now numbers,
right.
your cell phone number changes. You know, you deactivate your Facebook page. You know, and the whole nine yards. Now you want to fall off the face of the earth because as the brother now has been given a responsibility, we're running from that. So I think as we begin, as the brother began to talk about reacquainting the black man and the black woman, as we become, we first must be acquainted with self and to like ourselves and to love ourselves before, and then introduce that like self to that other person.
Right. Thank you, beloved. I appreciate that. Now I'm going to talk on as we deal with this, Brother Bateen's answer as well. Now let's deal with some of the effects of this, Brother Kenneth. 72% of black mothers are single. 63% of them have court-ordered child support. But less than 20% actually receive child support. Okay? Now, what is, under your understanding, as far as being an attorney goes, how big of an issue is this with child support with single mothers?
Well, I see this all the time, and let me, I'm going to an area I think will probably have a little better sound. But basically, in the legal system, you see it in divorce cases, you see it in child support cases, you see it in criminal cases, you see it really in all facets of the legal system on both the criminal and the civil side, the problem with child support. But in my view, all of these issues that are being raised are all interrelated because, you asked for me to answer the question as an attorney, but I have to step back, you know, as a spiritual person, having received the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have to look at everything from that vantage point first because we know from what we've been taught and from practicing what we've been taught that there is a way to live. There is a predetermined nature that each of us have, the male and the female. And each of us have various things that are really a birthright to us. Aspects of ourselves that are to be nurtured and developed. And if in our development and as we go through life, we're deprived of things that we are supposed to have, there is a tendency to try to compensate for it in other ways. So you'll see in a lot of brothers who were born with the nature to be masters, to dominate, to grow to a point of power, who are living in a society where there is no power, where there is nothing they can dominate, you find that there is an attempt to compensate inside of certain relationships. So then they try to dominate verbally and physically over a person, but at the root, it's something that's missing inside of them that is a preordained need that they had, but they weren't developed and cultivated to the point of being able to grow and express it in the way that they're meant to. This, in my view, relates, as far as men goes, to the issue of child support and support for the child, the woman,
et cetera, because if you have it in your nature to be a provider, we're taught as Muslims that men are the maintainers of women, that we have a role that isn't something that we just do, you know, because it's something that we just want to do. It's actually something that we're born for. And if you're living in a society where you can't really find a job, you're finding brothers on the corners, you have these high unemployment rates, but then even the brothers that are employed are in the kind of positions where they're getting, you know, part-time work or seasonal work, and a lot of times the women will have even better jobs. You find brothers compensating and doing things to try to at least satisfy that aspect of their nature. So a lot of brothers get into drugs. They get into gang life because the gang helps to compensate for something that's missing. You know, there might be a certain adrenaline rush or whatever within the hip-hop culture or different things where we're now compensating for something that we're supposed to have that we end up, you know, not really having it, and it's not really developing. So what ends up happening is if we can't get that feeling that brings peace to us from being a maintainer in the household, you find the brothers just throw their hands up a lot of times and don't even, you know, attempt to do anything. Because right. The little bit that they do, it just isn't what they, in their nature, would, you know, they're not really in a position to do it the right way. And I think a lot of brothers get into this mindset of, you know, well, forget that. I'm going to just go on with my life or about my business and go for self, and it just becomes a part of the culture. So I think all these things are related, but what ends up happening is, you know, you get statistics like you're saying, and then the numbers, you know, just go higher and higher and higher with all of these statistics. Then you got another generation that comes up. They aren't raised where they're now raised where they don't have fulfilled need in the same kind of way. And then there's compensation on their side, which brings out violence, which brings out, you know, all of these other things that we do to try to compensate for the inability to have these things in the natural way.
Okay. All right. Dr. Gito, are you still there? Is Dr. Ricky Jeter still there? Okay. Brother Maurice, are you still there?
I think he may have cut off.
Sir?
I think he may have cut off. We lost that number.
We lost both those numbers?
Right.
Oh, boy. Okay. Can we get them back? I'm going to move on, then I'm going to save this question for them when they come back.
Come back.
Sir?
I'll see if I can get them back.
Okay. Brother Bateen, are you still there?
Yes, I am, sir.
Beloved, listen to these numbers here. Divorce. Talking on male and female relationships tonight. I'm going to wait on Dr. Maurice, Magistrate Court Justice Maurice, and Dr. Jeter to come back on the line. I have another question. I'm not finished with that child support thing. That whole system is a mess, in my personal opinion. But I'm going to move on to you because there's something here I want to talk about. Divorce, brother. Now, we got 71% of divorce couples are ages 20 to 24 years of age. Here are the top 10 divorce states. Texas, number one. Florida, two. New York, three. Ohio, four. And they got Ohio twice here. Something wrong with that. North Carolina, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Virginia is tied with Washington State. Yeah, Virginia is tied with Washington State for the 10th spot. Brother, what is going on? We see statistics where very few are getting married, but then when they get married, 71% of them are divorcing between the ages of 20 and 24. What's going on that they're divorcing even though they get married, but they're divorcing at that early age and they're not even giving themselves time to make it work because it's between 20 and 24 years? What's going on with the marriage in this in America today with our youth?
Well, I wasn't really aware of those particular statistics. They're very interesting. But I would say that at the root of the problem of divorce, not just with young people, but pretty much everybody in our community that gets divorced, at the root of it is just not having good examples. And I think the same thing was talking about a lack of example. You know, we don't have a whole lot of examples because a lot of times, you know, we grow up in these single parent households. So oftentimes we don't even have a concept of what it's like to be married. And a lot of times we get married and don't really understand what it is that we're doing. Or maybe we saw somebody on TV or some example such as that. So at the root of it is that we really don't know what we're doing. We're really assuming that we know certain things, and then it goes back to what I was saying before. We haven't really settled down to a good choice because one of the things that our enemy determined for us as a people, I think it was earlier in the century, they said they would never teach us the science of warfare, the science of birth control, and I forgot the third one. But the science of mating. And see, when you look at other people, they understand that, you know, if you want seven, you know, you got to put a three and a four together, or a five and a two, or a six and a one. With our people, we just go about things haphazardly. We don't really go about making good choices, somebody that's going to be good for us. We don't even think in terms of, will this brother, will this sister be good for me? We just think in terms, as the sister was saying earlier, is it because, do they look good? Or can they sing? Can they play basketball? Or whatever the case may be. We don't really understand what the components of a relationship is. And we are taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that science and math, Islam is science and mathematics. And so we see, our enemies or other cultures, they are able to come together and marry and really make progress within their races by, you know, good marriages that produce good children. And our enemy knows that if we create or if we produce good families, then there will be good children that come out of these relationships that are feared by them because they realize that we have not been treated fairly. So it is not in the best interest of our enemy that we have wholesome relationships. And this is why the Honorable Minister Louis Farquhar pointed out just years ago, he was saying about how when you look into society, how it's easy for a black woman to get a job. It's easy for a black woman to do whatever she wants. She has a lot of freedom. And there's been this old saying that the only free people in this society is the white man and the black woman, you see. So there is a manipulation that is to the detriment of us coming together and creating good relationships. Because what does divorce mean? Divorce means that you got people that were together, or at least they thought they were together, and then they came apart. And so a lot of times we come apart. And sometimes we probably never should have been together, and we get together like that because we don't really understand what's good for me or what's good for you. You know, so if I'm a little kind of person that's a little junky, a little messy, you know, in my domestic life around the house, then I should not marry another, you know, a sister that I marry should not be somebody that's the same as me. We should learn to marry people that complement us, you see. And then when we begin to introduce a little bit of science and have a scientific approach to getting together in the first place, then I think we can greatly cut down the incidence of divorce in the society.
Wow. Okay. Brother Vernon, is Brother Maurice back?
Yes, sir. We're back.
Oh, okay. Is Dr. Gina with you? Is she still there?
Yes, she is.
Okay. I just wanted to I want to come back to something. We had moved on to divorce because we had lost you two. We were dealing with what Brother Kent was talking about with the child support. I got a question I want to ask you. They're showing in statistics that 42% of fathers have been incarcerated at one time or another for non-payment of child support. If the father is incarcerated, how can he possibly make payments? And what is all taken into consideration that before you put this person in prison or in jail for non-payment? I mean, what is the stipulation that he has to meet that's just getting him put in jail? Because the way I look at it, if he goes to jail, he can't make payments. And if he goes to jail and if he's got a job, he's going to probably lose his job because he's going to do 30 days, 6 months, or whatever the case may be. What all goes into that as far as incarcerating somebody for non-payment?
Well, I guess you can look at that. You can look at that from a couple of different perspectives, Brother Jihad and panelists. One perspective is that the brother is in jail for violating an order, and this order was to support his child. Now, regardless to the relationship of the sister and him at that point in time, the child still needs to be supported. And a lot of times when you have brothers with jobs, I've heard of brothers who quit jobs to keep from paying child support. You know, so it is not necessarily a bad thing at a certain point, because that particular stipulation is punitive, because you're not just placed in jail because you're on child support. You're placed in jail because you're failing to pay your child support. And when that child is not being supported financially, then, you know, if we are working a job and we work our 2 weeks and we go to the, you know, we get our check stub and it has zero on it, we got bills to pay. Then what happens to our life? What happens to that situation? So same goes with our child. You know, we can't say that the child is an entity that's going to survive by itself.
Okay. But what I'm hearing is there is no specific, for example, if I run a red light, I get a ticket. Or, you know, Title 39 in some states where it's to the officer's own discretion whether or not he wants to give a person a warning or give him a ticket. In this particular case, is there a stipulation set up? Okay, you violated the court agreement, you got to go to jail, or is that to your own discretion, or is there something written in stone about that?
Well, usually, brother, when a judge or a referee gives a person jail time, it's for severe noncompliance. You know, they've been working, you know, there are programs within child support realm that say, okay, well, first of all, in order to pay child support, you must have a job. So if you don't have a job, then let us look at why not. Is it training? Is it education? Is it a combination of both? And if there is a problem with your job or your education, then there are programs, and there should be programs, that will provide you with certain trainings and also certain lines of education. But I think that is something, dear brother, that as a community, we have to put out front. That in order, you know, as Brother Bateen was talking about earlier, you know, a sister is not a plaything. You know, we shouldn't play with our sisters just for pleasure. You know, a sister and a family is a responsibility. So if we're not willing to assume that responsibility, then stay away from that game. Don't play that game, because what will happen, and you know, and I think it's correct that there are some measures to place in order the child support situation. Now, is child support misused sometimes? Yes. Is child support taken advantage of in some instances? Yes. But the rule is not the case. The rule and the very subject of the child support is the child. So if there is not enough funds to support the child, then what will the child do? You know, do you have your child hungry? Do you and without provisions? So as black men, we have to step up to the plate and say, look, brothers, you know, even though me and the sister didn't make it, I got to make sure that my child has what he needs to make sure that he survives and that we don't, because the minister taught us in a couple of lectures that he did that a lot of our sins is based on economics. So our young sisters are prostituting because they don't have money. Our young brothers steal and sell crack because they don't have money. So they try to do things that will be ushered into a criminal element if they don't have proper provision. So I guess what I'm advocating is not so much of lock the brother up and now he becomes a victim / defendant. I'm saying let us get to a point of preventive maintenance where we are working with our brothers prior to, so that this is not an issue. See, it's not an issue whether the child is going to eat. Now, if you can make these babies and can't pay for them, then something needs to go down. You need to come up with.
Now, Brother Maurice, now, see, in some cases you got a brother who may already have a felony tied to his name, which makes it very difficult to get a job if that be the case. I'm talking about in the system now. I'm talking to people who believe in trying to find a job, opening up the want ads, looking for jobs every day. But there seems to be a vicious cycle where when you try to live inside of America as it is, once you get a felony, it's very difficult for you to get a job. Your credit is bad. It's very difficult for you to do a lot of things, especially if you're a black male with a felony. Now, we're showing here statistically-wise that only 5% of Hispanic males have this problem of being incarcerated, because largely a lot of them are, in fact, undocumented workers. But then it shows only 9% of white fathers are incarcerated. So largely it's black men, 42%. There's a big disparity here. There's a big gap.
Can I chime in?
And so, who's this?
This is Brother Kenneth.
Brother Kenneth, yes, sir. Oh, go right ahead, Brother Kenneth.
Yeah, anytime the law puts in place a hard and fast rule, it's because something has happened, something has been observed by the legislators in society where they see something going on and they're making their best effort to correct it. When they sit down and they figure out, okay, well, what is the rule, they have to set in place certain boundaries. Now, what ends up happening is whatever the prevailing problem was that they try to correct, there's going to be a whole host of situations that come up where people can basically get around the system, they're cheating the system, and then instances in which the rule is just too stringent as written for some class or some group of people. And what you find is that in the child support system, in many ways, like Brother Maurice was saying, the intent a lot of times is a good intent. And in many instances, not only is it a good intent, but the outcome is good, because there are plenty of cases that I've had where brothers will only pay the child support when they get right up to the point where they're about to be put in jail, and everybody knows that they had money, and they go to great lengths to try to hide the money. And it's only when they get right up to the line, then they pay all the money right at once, and they had it the whole time. Those are out there, and that system is good for them. But that same system that had to be written in some kind of rigid way, there's a whole nother group of people that are really trying, that really would do it if they could. But the judge doesn't necessarily know, because they don't have the ability to read people's minds, which person they're looking at.
Right.
You know, am I looking at somebody, the one that's really trying, that just isn't able, that just, you know, couldn't do it, or am I looking at the one that can come up with $10,000 as soon as he knows he's going to be put in jail? The judges don't know. The people that wrote the law don't know. All they could do is write a hard and fast rule. You know, so the only real judge, you know, is Almighty God Allah. Everybody else is just doing their best based upon observances. And a lot of times the hearings, you know, the judge might hear 5 to 10 minutes worth of evidence. Sometimes it might be longer, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes worth of evidence, and then they make a decision. But all that is what just happened to be said right at that moment. The judge doesn't really know these people. So the real way to get yourself out of this dilemma of having to be put in front of somebody that really doesn't know either person, doesn't really know how much a brother's trying to get money up to support their child, who, you know, has to go by this rigid rule that was written up by people that may have had good intentions, but they didn't think of every situation. The real way to get around it is for the parents to be able to communicate with each other, sit down, and work it out on their own, because they can always get with it without having to go into the system.
Is there anything that could be done to make the system, like, for example, you got a man that would work if he could find work. He can't find work. There is no work. He's not a follower of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, where he believes in doing something for himself, whatever the case may be. We're talking about the average schmo, the average Joe. Now, he comes to the courtroom. He doesn't have a job. I would work if I could find a job. Is there anything that the system is designed to do or could do to make it to help him find some kind of way to get some kind of assistance to help him get on his feet, whether it's education or whether it's sending him to a labor board or whatever the case is, or anything like that? Or that's not the court's concern at all?
No. Yeah, dear brother, there are actually, in most cases, and Brother Kenneth may agree with me on this, incarceration is the very last step.
Okay.
You know, there are intervention programs and help programs for brothers who have labor or who have job issues. Most judges will have phases and classes. I have conducted classes on resumes and getting the, you know, all of their information together. I've conducted classes where they would come in and list their skills. And then we help find with different employers, because really a lot of employers are really looking for good employees. You know, so the incarceration situation, that's not the first hearing. That's not the initial hearing of what's going on. You know, you owe $4, you owe 2 months, you're back 2-3 months. And then you're coming to prison and you're going to jail. That's not the case. Most times when you get so far in arrears, you're in five, and you know, in some cases I've seen, are six figures in child support. So, you know, one judge put it in a very diplomatic way.
She said he said that you and this young lady went half on a baby. She's paid her half the first few years of her life. Now it's time for you to pay your half. So you going in half on the child. So I don't think that there's a way around not supporting your child, but there are ways that, and with the different programs that they have in the fatherhood process, that will lend to finding jobs and even have alliances that these people may even get preferential treatment in finding jobs, because we're looking at incarcerating them. So what happens at that point, that $42 a day is spent on the father, and $27 a day is spent on the child. So now you're talking taxpayers paying, you know, $75, $76 a day for a man who does not take care of his responsibility. So what we did would be more effective if we taught this man and gave this man some skill than have to pay for these children and a man.
Right.
So our program, so it is not the we're just going to throw, because if you ask most of the brothers, when you, if you go back and do the interviews and ask them, you know, how much do you owe? Well, I owe $47,000. I owe $63,000. I owe $112,000. Now, that didn't happen in a vacuum. That ain't two payments.
Right.
You're not Barry Bond. You know, you're not an NFL superstar. So your payments on the average in the neighborhood of about $450 to $500 a month. You know, that's a car note. So if you're working and making sure that you do what you're supposed to do, if the child was with you in your home, and see, that's one of the things that we have to understand, that the figure is not just pulled out of the air. It is a formula of income.
It's a formula. Okay.
Yeah, it's a formula of income that the mother and father come together, and as Brother Kenneth alluded to, the litigation that takes place within the court hearing. This is, they're debating about those figures. You know, if you're bringing home $1,000 and she's bringing home $1,000, then what will the child, what type of lifestyle would the child be accustomed to? That's
now,
why
brother,
when you,
I'm going. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was about to say that's when you have these superstars who have, you know, $12,000 a month in child support payments, and you look at their income, they're making $200,000 to $300,000 a month. So, you know, what's $12,000?
I'm going to go ahead and stop right here, and I'm going to switch this a little bit. If we have questions on the line, Brother Vernon, can you just hold on for 1 second? I've got to get this part out, and then we can carry out the rest of the show with this. And if we have callers that have a comment or something, we'll give them a brief moment. But, you know, our time got taken up tonight because we wanted to hear from the governor of New Jersey. But let me go ahead here. Yeah, let me go in here, because this is another part of another series coming in. I can see this right now. And Brother Maurice, you and I have talked about doing a boots on the ground town hall meeting. So we'll have time to address a lot of this. But let me show you something here real quick. And Brother Bartine, I definitely want you to chime in on this. If we are 72% of our babies are being raised in a single home, no father in the home, this woman raises a child, father's not there, I want you to listen to this alarming statistic. It says here, children from fatherless homes are 5 times more likely to commit suicide. Children from fatherless homes are 32 times more likely to run away. Children from fatherless homes are 20 times more likely to have behavioral disorders. Children from fatherless homes, sisters, I hope you're listening, 72%, I hope you're listening. Children from fatherless homes, 14 times more likely to commit rape. Children from fatherless homes, 9 times more likely to drop out of high school. Children from fatherless homes, 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances.
children from fatherless homes, 9 times more likely to end up in a state-operated institution, and children from a fatherless home, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. Brother Bateen, what say you?
Well, I would just think it goes back to what I was saying earlier. There's a concerted effort to make sure that our children don't come up in a home with a father or with two parents, because this is a method to keep us back as a people, because the family is the best environment to nurture a person who would develop in such a way that he would not be prone to do any of these things in which you're speaking of. So what we have to do is we have to, you know, the theme of the show is male-female relationships. And what we have to do as a people, we have to study and learn this science that we have been deprived of, because we don't know how to make good choices. We don't understand the dynamics. I mean, we know how to make cakes and pies and make everything else, but we don't know how to make a relationship. It's difficult to do that which we don't know. Like the scriptures say, how would they know except they had a teacher? And we've had a teacher in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who have given us some basic information and basic knowledge that we would be able to pursue relationships where the mother and the father would stay together and provide a wholesome environment in which our children can grow up mentally and emotionally stable.
So, can I comment on that as well?
Yes. Go ahead, please.
One second. Who's that, Brother Kenneth?
Yes, it is.
Okay, one second, Brother Kenneth. Brother Vernon, do we have any callers that want to ask a question at this time or make a comment real quick before I let the panelists go?
Let's see. I know that we have Sister Gidget on the line who said she wanted to make a comment earlier.
Does she still want to make a comment? And then I'm going to let Brother Kenneth go ahead, because this is some topic here. Is our sister still on the line?
Sister Gidget, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here. Assalamu alaikum, family. How are you?
Wa alaikum salam, beloved. How are you?
I'm fine. Assalamu alaikum to Brother Maurice and Brother Kenan and Brother Bateen and Sister Dr. Jeter. Greetings to you all. And Brother Todd, I know you have moved on from the subject of the single mother's rate being 72%, but I have to put this out there. You know, a lot of that also comes from the fact, and since you're on fatherless homes, it comes from the fact that most times our first encounter with a man is with a man that is outside of our family when we have been brought up in single-parent homes. And so, therefore, a man that's having a sexual interest in a woman, that's her first experience with a man. And it becomes a normal behavior because she didn't have a father that taught her her value and her worth and taught her the behavior of men who were devious or you know, didn't have her best intentions. So she gravitates to a man because it's her nature to desire a man, but she's desiring the wrong type of man, but this is the only example that she's had. And so absenteeism of the father in the home is also one of the biggest causes of unwanted pregnancies, and I just wanted to, you know, add that statistic to what you already had.
Beautiful. Now, but don't go nowhere because I got to ask you a question. What have you got for Thursday night for me?
Well, Thursday night, you would not believe it, but the FOI have something they want to say to the MGT, and that's all I'm saying. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All praise is due to Allah. Thank you, sisters. I appreciate you calling
in.
Well, alaykum salam. Yes, Brother Kenneth, did I disturb your floor, Brother Kenneth? Are you still there?
I'm still here.
I'm sorry, brother. Go right ahead. I was dealing with the alarming rate of all of our children, how they're slipping through the cracks. Go right ahead, brother.
Yeah, at that point, you had went through several examples or several statistics regarding children that are raised by single mothers. And I was just going to say that from a scriptural standpoint, the life of Mary and the life of Hagar from the Old Testament and the New Testament of the Bible and the Holy Quran are key points in each of those texts for a reason. And Minister Farrakhan has taught how it has been known that there would be this time period where there basically would not be a man in that role, in the basically taking the role that a man is supposed to take, and that the female would be in a position of basically raising children without a father. And when you look at what happened with Hagar, Abraham basically puts her out. She has a baby, and all Muslims in doing the pilgrimage have to go and retrace the steps of Hagar, where she's running with her baby from hill to hill, crying out for help. And then she basically falls down and prays, and that's when the well of Zamzam springs up. And then from the New Testament, you have Jesus, who, you know, scholars can debate exactly what it's meant. From a Muslim standpoint, we believe that Jesus had a biological father. The book of Romans says it straight out, you know, and it's clear in the text, but that it's written that way where it looks as if it's just Mary with a relationship with Almighty God, because it's known what's actually going to happen, you know, in this period of time right before the coming of the Messiah. So we really have to look at it from both vantage points. That yes, there are these negative statistics, women raising children on their own, but then what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has always asked is, okay, and why, and what is ultimately happening, and how does it relate to what was allowed for our people to go through with other hardships, because we went through the hardship of slavery. And then there's these hardships in terms of single women raising, you know, children on their own, and that's a hardship on top of what we went through from the, you know, slave time period on. And what is it that is being produced out of all of this hardship? And there is the negative, but there is that ultimate positive. And there is something different about us, and there's something different about the generations that we produce in terms of the fearlessness and the evolution that we are going through in our thought. And there just isn't a people like us. You know, with all that we've gone through, there really isn't a people that think in the way that we do in so many different ways, because we're unique in terms of our desire to serve others from all of the because of the effect of suffering that it has on you, where you just think for others a lot more than other people do. So I just wanted to put the positive on it that it was known that that was going to happen, and there is that ultimate purpose for it.
Right, and I thank you for that, beloved. And as you know, the show tonight is called Male and Female Relationships, the Law of Cause and Effect. So these statistics are not talking about just black people. They were talking about, in general, what happens when you don't have a man in the home as a father, as a leader, as a provider, see, as a counselor, see. These are statistics that are talking about that are happening in the human family now. This is not just talking about black America. This could be a white child. This could be a black child, Latino child, Native American, Indian child, any child. They're showing that because with every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. That's a law. So it doesn't make a difference on the color on this particular aspect. We're dealing with a fall of a nation now. See, this is actually a state of emergency because America itself, this is one of the signs that you can see of her fall, her domestic life.
Right.
The divorce rate, through the roof. Unwed mothers, through the roof. All of these statistics are bearing witness to the decline of a civilization here. Let me move on because I brought this statistic out because Brother Maurice had said something earlier about the child support. It's about the baby. You know, if, who's going to take care of that child? You have an obligation to take care of that child. Well, we see here the effects of what happens when a child slips through the cracks. They wind up having to come back to the court. Rape, imprisonment, drug abuse, see, suicide. They wind up being right back, and it becomes a vicious cycle as a people, period. Okay, and Brother Maurice, did you want to chime in on this?
I did have one little piece that I wanted to add. As you were going down the number of statistics, you know, 20% of 20 times most likely from fatherless homes. But one of the things that I would like us to do as a community and a culture is to really look at our language, because we're talking about children that are born, but we're stating that they're fatherless. None of the children are fatherless. They all have a suitor that brought them into the earth and brought them into this realm based on a relationship with a woman. What I think has happened, it has become socially tolerable for a brother to disallow that relationship. I'm quite sure all of us have some friends who are behind in their child support. I'm quite sure all of us have friends and people that we associate with, and we don't see anything wrong with that. Now, if they were shoplifters or thieves or even murderers or liars, then we would be a little cautious of them. So I would be very, very strong to ask us to look at our language of how we begin to refer, because it is becoming more socially acceptable for us to be fatherless with fathers. Now, I think one of the things we have to do is begin to increase, not necessarily the punishment, we don't want to punish our brothers, but the awareness of our brothers with children. What is your relationship with your children? If you see that brother, ask him, question him, talk to him, and make it less, you know, make it less acceptable for him to go for 5 months and not talk to the baby. That dad needs, or that child needs, their father to be there, regardless of the relationship of the sister, but the dad needs to be there for their child. Because what happens is when that sister does not have that thermostat in the house, and the father is the thermostat, he sets the climate. If you got a lazy daddy, you're going to have a lazy house. If you're going to have a productive father, you're going to have a productive mother who has to have productive children in order to keep up with this productive father. So this man has to, even if he's not in the home, he still has to take his role. And we cannot excuse any of our brothers regardless to the circumstance, for their role as father today. It is almost is a state of emergency, as you said, as Sandy was a couple of hours ago. This is the hurricane that's flying through our community, the baby daddy scenario. We need to stop talking about baby daddy. That is now a functional member of the family that's dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm asking us as we're talking to look at what we're actually saying, that these children that are born into the world are fatherless. No, we need to, and so what we've done is counsel that brother in that capacity. No, we need to stimulate that brother in that capacity. We need to begin to be more supportive of one another as men to help each other to support our children.
Mm-hmm. Very good point, Brother Maurice. Very good point. Brother Bateen, would you like to comment on that as well? Or
just keep going, brother. Just keep going.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm thinking of some other things, but just continue if
okay.
you would. I
okay.
don't have a comment
And for Brother Maurice's sake, we won't call him fatherless. We'll just say single parent household. How's that, Brother Maurice?
Thank you, sir.
Okay, here we go. 28%
Sister Jita would like to add something.
Oh, I'm sorry, sister, because I was hoping she was going to chime in before, but she let you push her out the way, brother. But you go right ahead, Sister Jita.
I think I was intently listening, and I really just kind of wanted to interject and piggyback on what Mr. Muhammad was saying. I think personally, I got everything as far as values, as far as self-esteem, as far as awareness about other men from my father. So I think that I was very fortunate. And I think as women, we don't place enough value on our men. I think nowadays that we have to be superwoman and we have to do a lot of things ourselves. But I think as women, we don't place a lot of value on our men, and we don't understand that our daughters need that male figure. Because as I stated before, I think that I got a lot of my self-esteem, a lot of who I am, a lot of my ability to try to make sound decisions because I had a father. My father was not in the home because my parents divorced when I was 9. But even though my father was not present in the home every day, he was a presence in my life every day. For every graduation, for making cupcakes at the school, you know, I was embarrassed at the time, but I think that it gave me a lot of my self-esteem. And I think as a people, when we place value on our men, who are supposed to be the head of our household, who are supposed to be our leaders, I think a lot of times that the tide will turn once we do that.
Okay. So would you say, Sister Jita, that Dr. Jita, that you grew up in a single-family household, but you were not fatherless? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And that was just piggybacking off of what Mr. Muhammad was saying. My father was not in my home, but my father was definitely a huge part of my life, and he still is today. I'm 38 years old, and I talk to my daddy every single day.
Wow, beautiful. That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Wow. Now, having said that, is there a difficulty factor involved in finding a mate today? That because the minister talked, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan raised some very serious comments about black men as far as education-wise, how 50% of us are actually operating under functional rates as far as school-wise. And then 50% of us who do qualify, we wind up having jobs that really are underpaying.
for the knowledge and the talents that we bring to the job. So there's a difficulty factor because sisters are going to college at an alarming rate, and most of the successful ones in college that are sisters, they're not being able to find men that are on their level, so to speak, as far as peers when they go to school. Do you find that to be a gap that can be worked out? And if you do, how can you work that gap out?
I think that it is something that we can work out. I don't think a brother's character is based on a college degree.
Right.
We have plenty of men that are great fathers, who are great men, period, that may have not had the chance to go to college. I think, it is a problem, but I think that we can work it out. I have.
How do you suggest that?
I think a lot of times, like I said, as a woman, I'm not seeking out just a man with a college degree, because we have men with college degrees who are not a good caliber of man. So I think that our vision has to change. We don't necessarily have to have a man who is, who's college educated. He may have a trade, and he may have mastered a trade and turned it into a career.
Okay. All right. Let me keep moving forward, because we dealt with that last week. That's why I brought that up to you, because I wish you could have been here last week. We had that very same conversation, because there seems to be a gap developing even when it comes to the payroll in the household, where she makes a lot more money, or he can't get the credit, so the house is in her name, the car is in her name, she makes more money. And the first thing that comes up in the argument is, well, you can get out of my house, or things of that nature. So there's definitely a gap there between that. Now, I've noticed that there are other cultures that don't really have that problem like we have that problem. That's why I was asking you, what do you think a remedy would be to help close that gap between the male-female relationship in the black community where that is concerned?
If I have respect for you and the relationship that we're in, why am I bringing up that I'm making more money than you? Why is that even an issue?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that shouldn't even be an issue. I think as a people, we don't know how to argue. When even if it comes up, there's usually something else behind that.
Okay.
So I just think that's something that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay. All right. Beautiful. Brother Kenneth, are you still there? I hear him quick. Brother Kenneth, are you still there?
He may have dropped off. I don't think I see his number.
Okay. But Brother Maurice,
in divorce,
what seems to be the biggest issue why people are divorcing that you know of? What seems to be some of the top reasons why people are divorcing?
You know, Brother Jihad, one of the most, the chief issue of divorce and reason for divorce, in my opinion, is unfulfilled expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because we don't clearly define what our goals and objectives to the marriage is. You know, we want a nice wedding. You know, we will go down the line and say yes to the dress, but we won't talk about our future. You know, we won't talk about and basically communicate what we want from life. And oftentimes what happens with that is we meet people and we start off pretty good. And then when the mask comes off and self comes out, it's not what we wanted. And really, because we're dealing with issues of Dianetics now, I'm looking for mama and my wife, and she's looking for daddy and me. And that particular goal has not been met. And so now we're frustrated because this person is not what I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to be my mom, and it's not the case. And she thought I was going to be her daddy, and that's not the case. So what happens is we begin to stop the process of relating because we stop communicating. And whenever a military takes a group of men or women into battle, when they're brought back, the first thing that happens is they are debriefed. And we don't debrief enough when we come from our channels of endeavor, and so we grow apart. So the person that you married is not the person that actually exists 5 or 6 years because we've not taken the time to communicate with that person. Uh-huh. We're not communicating directly their needs, their wants, their whys. We know that their favorite color is blue, but we don't know why it's blue. We know that she likes, you know, a certain Coach bag or whatever, but we don't know the significance of that because we're not delving deep enough, even into ourselves, to even have the capacity to delve into someone else's presence of mind and presence of being. So I think divorce is inevitable when you are dissatisfied with self. So I think one of the key points of marriage is the same very basic tenet that when we came into the Nation of Islam, we were given when the messengers told us to accept our own and be ourselves.
Yes.
And oftentimes we don't accept our own. We don't accept our difficulties. We don't accept the fact that I might not be the best housekeeper, as Brother Batini was saying, and I need someone to help me. But the bad part about it, we are not enough to accept that criticism. So we take it as an insecurity point. So when the person speaks on it, now we want to fight with it, and then that's when we throw up, well, I got 7 degrees. Get out of my house. But does right. that have anything to do with the fact that I don't want to necessarily, I want you to tell me that I'm messy?
Beautiful.
That's not the point. So because I'm insecure about that, because I have not accepted that, and I'm not trying to better myself with that. You know, so I think one of the things that as we are working on divorce, when we are working on our nation, we have to be real with ourselves. You know, who is this person knowing? You know, brothers, you know, everybody say ain't no good nothing out there. You know, ain't no good men, ain't no good women. But and the minister asked a question in a lecture in Hawaii, who are you good for? And when good is so relative in our community, then we have to really be sticklers about the definition of good that's good for us.
Beautiful, Brother Maurice. Thank you so much, brother, for you coming on tonight. I really appreciate that. We've got to get together again and finish up that strategy for Boots on the Ground Town Hall. And okay. Sister Gita the same. And Sister Gita, would you come back, Sister Dr. Gita?
I would love to. I am honored to be sitting amongst such wonderful people.
Oh, beautiful. Well, we definitely got to make you a member of the family of nation building. Have you been invited to come to a Muhammad's mosque yet?
I have not.
Okay, well, I'm Brother Maurice, too late, brother. Sister, I would like for you, you know, this Sunday or Sunday of your choice, to go to mosque number 69 right there in Birmingham and just tell them Brother Jihad Muhammad sent you. Tell them Brother Jihad sent you. You're my guest. All right? So you just, Brother Maurice, just make sure she try to get there and go out and see the family. And also, we love you to come back and be part of the Nation Building family, sister.
Yeah,
all right, all right. Brother Patin,
yes,
are you
sir.
Still there? Can you
Absolutely.
Give us a few words, brother, in your own words tonight on male-female relationships, brother, as we close out? Take about 2 or 3 minutes and just talk to us real fast. Something on your heart that you just want to say.
Yes, sir, brother. Well, you know, when you tell me just take two or three minutes, you know, it's almost like telling a preacher. You know, 2 or 3 minutes, but I do the best.
Yes, sir.
But it just—I guess, really, you know, it pretty much comes down along the lines that I was talking about earlier. That the Honorable Elijah Muhammad pointed out to us that
that when we were brought over here as slaves, everything was, the knowledge of self was taken away from us. You know, to the point that, you know, we even have to be taught everything all over again. And he said that we didn't even know how to go to the toilet. You know what I mean? We had to be taught
right.
the proper way to do that. And so, and it just stands to reason that something as important as developing a relationship and developing a family, that this would be a very strategic thing to keep this knowledge away from us. Because as long as we don't have family, then family is one of the basic things that teaches us the concept of unity. Unity is the only thing that is going to really help us as a people. Now, we can say everything we say about the Republican Party and all of this kind of stuff, but one thing that they have done, they have unified under one particular cause. You know, the Republican Party in general really don't like Mitt Romney. They was talking about him like a dog just a few minutes ago. But since they have united against Obama, they have come together, you know. And I think unity is something that we need as a people, and we will never develop proper relationships, male and female, until we understand the components of a relationship. You know, we can say, well, I love you, baby. I love you this, I love you that. But most of us don't really even have a concept as to what love is and really even what a proper relationship is. And we must realize that there are components, there are several components that make up a relationship. And when we can identify and understand these components, then we can see where we are and how we are contributing or taking away from the development and the fostering of proper relationship.
Beautiful. Thank you, Brother Bateen. And we've got to have you back, brother. Would you be willing to come back again, sir?
Absolutely, brother.
All praise is due to Allah, brother. I enjoyed you for the last 2 weeks, brother. Thank you so much for coming back. And stay on me, brother, with the Dianetics. You know, I've done auditing, but I have not finished the course for being an auditor. And so I would like you to stay on top. Stay on top of me with that, brother. I really appreciate everything that you do.
Yes, sir.
And again, you got my vote for E-Mam in Atlanta, Georgia, brother, when it comes up. So that's a vote. That's one vote you got, brother. That's mine. That's for sure.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say that that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has pointed out to us that Dianetics is a very effective tool in relation building, not just for male-female relationships, but male-male relationship and female-female relationship. And by studying these things, we are able to map out the terrain of relationship. And by using a map, well, then you can see where you are. So if you are contributing to if you are contributing to the lack of relationship or whatever it is, then you can look at the map and see where you are on the map, and then you can analyze the components and see what you need to improve on yourself.
Beautiful. Thank you, beloved. Thank you very much, sir.
Ain't enough time to really go into it.
No, it's not.
We'll get back to it.
Yeah, we're going to get back to it. Thanks again, though, beloved. Brother Gene, are you there? Is Brother Gene still on the line? Oh, he's not on the line. Okay. Brother Maurice, would you like to go ahead and take 2 or 3 minutes, brother, and say what's on your heart tonight? This is just part 3 of male-female relationships. Brother Maurice, do you have anything that you want to say?
before we close out? We got about 2 or 3 minutes.
In closing, dear brother, first of all, I didn't earlier, but I definitely want to extend the greetings of Peace and Paradise to you and the other panelists and the staff of the show of Islam Lakum.
Well, Lakum.
And one of the things, dear brother, that if we could go back to the very basic point of our teaching, and that very basic point is when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad began to divine heaven for us. And he said that the heaven for the black man is at the foot of the black woman, and that heaven for the black woman is at the foot of the black man. And that lets me know that there is something highly divine in each one. But when we are in our proper state, and when we are looking at ourselves not from our circumstance, because circumstance sometimes can paint our vision of one another, but look at each other from the potential that God has made us into his image and after his likeness, so that we can really pull out of each other. And it's a beautiful thing when you see a brother and a sister pull out of each other their absolute divinity. And I'm just so humbled to be with you today, and always it's always a pleasure to be among the brotherhood and the sisterhood with the brothers and sisters in the Nation of Islam and all of our people, because all of our people, it's going to take all of us to get this together, and it's going to take all of our brothers in the church and in the streets, wherever they may be. We all need to see the value in one another, as Brother Bassoon began to talk about earlier. I remember when Brother Abdul Sharif was our Supreme Captain, and he would always tell us, brothers, show each other honest appreciation every day. So if we show our sisters honest appreciation, and we show our brothers honest appreciation, we could honestly appreciate ourselves. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in closing, gave us a petty piece that I would love for us to really endeavor into, and that is the proper handling of our people and, you know, influencing people and winning friends. So, dear brothers and sisters, thank you for having me. Thank you, and Sister Judith stepped away, but it has been a wonderful experience for both of us today.
All praise due to Allah. All praise is due to Allah. Thank you, Brother Maurice, for all that you do, brother, and you have been a giant of a guest for us out on the front line with the Fruit of Islam from the very first time we aired our show, and I just want to thank you for all that you do. This will be put back on the internet probably tonight or tomorrow for those who would like to go back up and go through this again. And I would recommend that they go and check out all of the shows that we've done up to this point. This is about our fifth show, and I would hope that all of us would go back up there and look at these again, because Brother Maurice, you, Brother Kenneth, is Brother Kenneth on the line? Okay. Yourself, Brother Kenneth, you gave us some very valuable tips in the law concerning stand your ground and the 13th Amendment and things of that nature, and it would behoove everyone to go back into the archives and pull up those Black America on Lockdown, where you really showed us a lot in the law and what we should be trying to do in the law. Is Brother Gene back on the line, Brother Vernon?
Yes, sir, he's with us. Brother Gene from 314.
Yes, yeah, sir. Brother Gene, are you there? Brother, you got 1 minute, Brother Gene. We tried to get you, brother. Can you tell us what's in that final call real quick?
Brother, I've been waiting on the line for 45 minutes trying to make a comment or a question.
Well, we called on you. We called on you, but you weren't there.
You called on me 2 minutes ago, brother. But I was here. The final call, this one topic I would like to read in the final call, and I'm going to make it quick. Well, the front page of the final call is Critical Election, Critical Choice.
But I want to go back. I want to just go to the article about what's happening in Newark, New Jersey. It's on page 9. And it says, New Jersey economic comeback bypasses blacks. It says the governor, who just we heard his press conference, has been saying since January that New Jersey has made an economic comeback and promised to cut taxes by 10%. Some say the government can talk about a Jersey comeback, but things are still pretty tough for blacks in the state. Unemployment is at 18% in New Jersey. And it talks about is that unemployment is at 28% in other parts of New Jersey. So there's there's no need to wonder why New Jersey was pretty bad. And they said New Jersey is got some of the most richest counties in the country. Although the blacks are suffering in New Jersey, and it's got some of the most prestigious districts. But I just wanted to read that one, sir.
Oh, okay, brother. And I apologize, Brother Jing. I didn't know you had another question out there. Next time, just hit me up if you're in queue and you're not being recognized. Just hit me up on my text, and I'll see you, brother, and I'll get back to you. But do me a favor, hold that for next week. Or not next week, but the week after, because this is just the end of part 3, Brother Gene. We're not finished yet. We're going to be having in 2 weeks.
Okay,
Brother Captain Curtis Muhammad, Captain Emeritus Curtis Muhammad, Brother Jamil Muhammad, National Spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Lewis Clark Condemnation of Islam.
Okay.
All right, so that's in 2 weeks. But we got to go. We got to go. We want to stay proper to our time. Keep the discipline. That's our show for tonight. I hope we all learned something from our guest tonight. I want to thank our panelists, Brother Maurice Muhammad, Brother Bateen Muhammad, Brother Kenneth Muhammad, attorney at law, and Sister Dr. Jeter. We thank you for coming on the show tonight. And I just want to say to all the soldiers out there, let's take advantage of this opportunity up in the Northeast. You are the first responder in your community. The Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan says, like Jesus, love one another even as I have loved you. Go out your house. Go to your neighbor's house. Knock on the door and say, I'm here. What can I do as a service to you? We've got to learn to pull together and become unified up in New Jersey, New York, all 23 states where this hurricane has taken effect. Let us go to our people now. Talk to your neighbors. Come outside the house. You got a bowl of bean soup. You got water. Let's talk. Okay, you got flashlights. I got blankets. Let's talk. Let's get together now and unify and become a nation now. All right, let's take advantage of this unfortunate circumstance that's taking place with the hurricane, and let's go to our people. Go check on the elderly neighbors. Go check on the babies in your community now. This is the time. We must unite, just as the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan has asked us to do. We've got to do this for ourselves now. To all the soldiers with this final call, you know what time it is. Saturday, boots on the ground. Shout out to Seattle, Washington. Shout out to Washington, D.C., New York, Birmingham, Jackson, Mississippi, Houston, Texas, Atlanta, GA. Shout out to all the soldiers with boots on the ground. Let's tighten up them shoes, shine them up, get them suits nice and crisp, white shirt, bow tie. Let's go to our people as saviors and soldiers with love for our people. May Allah bless us all. We love you, dear Apostle, the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan. That's right, every Sunday. Get on the line. Go check out our webcast, NOI.org, every Sunday at 10 o'clock, all right, Central Time. And I'm on the prayer line every morning at NOI Final Call. That prayer line number is 760-569-7676, and the access number is 906-378-POUND. Get on that prayer line every morning at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with Captain Emeritus Curtis Muhammad and his co-host, Brother Waleed Muhammad. Love you all. May Allah bless us all. Assalamu alaikum.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.